Well, good morning and welcome to worship here at Bethany. My name is Liz DeSeth-Pearl and I'm one of the pastors here at Bethany, and I'm so excited to welcome you to worship in person and online. Today we are beginning a new series called Family Matters. Now, if you're like me and grew up in the watching the 90s sitcom Family Matters, I can say I'm sorry, we're not going to be talking about that, and Steve Urkel is not going to come knocking on our door, but we are going to be talking about some of the most important relationships that we have in our entire lives, and that's with our families. What makes families so amazing and beautiful are that they come in all sorts of different configurations. There is not one way to have or create a family. The people you call family may be the people that you're related to. They may be the family that you have created. It may be the family that you call family may be those deep relationships that have become so intertwined with yours that they truly are family, and everything in between. Families can be filled with amazing and strong and beautiful relationships where you feel loved and cared for and supported. Families can also be filled with struggles and frustrations and difficult and broken relationships. They can sometimes make you feel overwhelmed or heartbroken. And again, most of the times, it is the struggles and the joys, the frustrations, and the hope and laughter, the pain and the love all rolled into one. The amazing thing about families is that no two families are the same. Each family is uniquely their own. A prime example of this is family traditions. Think about all of the family traditions that you have. They're uniquely your own family. You do it, it may be similar, but you do it in your own way and have a reason why. For example, as I have been growing up, and a tradition that Josh and I continue now, is that every Christmas Eve, my family eats spaghetti. Why? Not because my mom came from this huge Italian family or grew up with this amazing thing. It's because my mom is one of five. And my poor grandmother had to get all five of them, two or seven of them really, to church on time for Christmas Eve. And spaghetti was an easy meal that she could easily feed her family of seven and get them to church on time. And now it's not out of necessity, but it's out of tradition, right? This is what we eat every Christmas Eve. The truth is, no two families are the same. And the amazing thing is that every single person has one. Every family structure is different. It may look different, whether you're married or single, if you're widowed or divorced, you have kids or don't have kids, if you're connected to the people that you call family through DNA or something bigger, no matter how you define or structure your family is beautiful, and everyone has one. And I would venture to guess that all of us could agree that we want those family relationships to be as strong and as connected and as filled with love as humanly possible. Because we know how easy it is to be distracted by so many things, by busyness, by stress, by communication breakdowns, by the secrets we try to hide. We don't have to look very far to see that there are things that are going to pile on us and want to tear us apart. So throughout these next 3 weeks, we are going to look into and really dig deep into how to keep God at the center of our families, and in doing so, how we can better deal with all of the family matters that come our way. So we begin today looking at a story about Jesus's own family. Now, believe it or not, in the gospel texts, we don't get a lot of pictures of what it looks like for Mary, Joseph, and Jesus to be family together. We get the birth story at Christmas, but then there's all of this time that just passes. I've always wondered, what was Jesus like as a toddler? Like, how could Mary and Joseph discipline this toddler knowing that, yes, he is their son, but he's also God's son? It's kind of a hard position to be in. Or what was Jesus like as a teenager, like a rebellious teenager? How does this all work? But in this story, this wedding at Cana story, we get a glimpse and a picture of what it looks like for Jesus and Mary as mother and son. Now, this is at the very beginning of the Gospel of John. Well, not the very beginning, but close to it. It's right after Jesus has been baptized by John the Baptist and his ministry has started. And so this is the first miracle or the first ministry moment that Jesus has. And he turns water into wine at a wedding. So Jesus and his disciples and his mother are all together at this wedding. And in Jesus' day, weddings were long, like multiple days long. And they were filled with opportunities for people to drink wine. And if you ever ran out of wine, that was very bad. It could cause stress and it could cause a major problem. And so there seemed to be this kind of rumor, this kind of hush going around, and Mary found out that they had run out of wine. And Mary seemed to know that this time-honored tradition that is still in place today, if there is a problem at the wedding, don't tell the bride, right? Because I have been a bridal party, been part of the bridal party of 10 weddings and a bride of my at my own and presided over many weddings. And I can tell you every single time there is a thing that happens, that there's this hush, that no one wants to tell the bride or the groom what's really happening, right? I remember being in the room with a bunch of bridesmaids as someone accidentally spilled some water on the bride's dress before she had actually put it on. Whew, it was a little intense, but it worked out okay. We all just kept our mouths shut, and by the time she got dressed, it was dry and nothing had ever happened. I remember about 45 minutes before a ceremony one time, we realized that one of the florists forgot one of the bridesmaid bouquets, so we're taking apart all the bridesmaid bouquets and trying to desperately put together another one. Right, again, bride had no idea. And even at our own wedding, Josh and I did not find out until after we returned from our honeymoon that there was an issue with some of the desserts that we had ordered for our reception that didn't actually ever get there. And our bridal party took care of it, and we knew nothing about it until we came back and they were like, oh, we've got to tell you something. So a similar problem was happening at this wedding that they were attending. Mary knew that going to the bride or to the groom and saying, hey, you're out of wine, was going to cause more stress than needed. So she went to Jesus, knowing and trusting that he could do something. And so she simply said, have no more wine. And I love Jesus' response to this, by the way. He doesn't say, okay, mom. He says, dear woman, that's not our problem. My time has not yet come. Jesus tried to hold her off for a moment, tried to, you know, say, Mary, just kind of wait a second. This is not the right time. But Mary, being the good mother that she was, persisted. And she didn't take no for an answer, even though her son is the Son of God. And she just said to the servants, do whatever he tells you. And Jesus doesn't throw a fit. Jesus doesn't protest. Jesus doesn't say no. Jesus simply acts. And when he acts, Jesus transforms regular water into the very best wine. When the master of ceremonies tasted the water that was now wine, not knowing where it had come from, though of course the servants knew, he called the bridegroom over. A host always serves the best wine first, he said. Then, when everyone has had a lot to drink, he brings out the less expensive wine. But you have kept the very best until now. The truth is that sometimes in our own lives, and sometimes especially with our own families, We have the same mentality as we do with brides and grooms during weddings. When we experience problems or have difficulties, it becomes easier to just not tell the family or just not talk about it. It becomes easier to hide our problems away from even our closest relatives, because when we are open with our secrets and our deepest troubles, that means we have to be vulnerable. And vulnerability is scary. It pushes us outside of our comfort zones, and so it becomes easier not to mention how many drinks the uncle had at the family get-together, because everyone saw it, but no one wants to talk about it. It becomes routine to hide the financial stresses that you and your spouse are experiencing while you watch your sibling buy another brand new car. It becomes easier just to create a list in your head of those things we just don't talk about in front of grandma and grandpa in order to not cause a problem. It becomes easier to want to hide things away with and especially sometimes from our families. But every single family has had those things that they just don't want to talk about. The broken relationships, the struggles, the addictions, the pain, things that just become the elephant in the room. But what would change? What would change in our families, in our relationships, and in our lives if we took a lesson from Mary? Because in Mary and Jesus' interaction, we see this. Our first task is to name the problem. Then, once the problem is named, we give it to God. Because when we do, God transforms the problem into something new. What if we took a critical look at our families and asked, what are we avoiding? What are we not talking about? What are we hiding? Because the answer to some of those questions may lead us to be able to first name the problem. And in order to deal with a family matter, we have to name it first. Name the struggle. Name the communication breakdown. Name the secret that we've been hiding for so long. Because in naming the problem, we begin to uncover it. It no longer has the power. When we name it, it no longer has power. Once we have named it, then we have the opportunity to do exactly what Mary did. Give it up to God. Trusting like she did that God will and can act. Now, this is so much easier said than done. It is easy to think, okay, yeah, I'll pray one prayer, and then all of a sudden that problem will be taken up, and I will wake up next morning, and it will be taken care of, because God is amazing like that. Now, sometimes it works like that, and if it does for you, come talk to me, because I want to learn more. But giving it up to God can also just be it's a daily thing. It's a daily, consistent thing, because it can be so easy to name it and give it up to God and say, okay, God, you're going to take care of it, and walk away for a minute, and then God doesn't change. It doesn't change yet, right? And it's still there, so I'm going to pick it back up again because God hasn't done anything about it yet. Well, that's not exactly true. I do that too, just as much as everyone else. I find myself thinking, okay, God, I know that there is a problem between me and some of my family members. I've named the problem, good for me. And I'm going to give it to you. I do that for a while. And then all of a sudden, that birthday goes by, or the holiday goes by, or I get a phone call, and all of a sudden I'm triggered with all of those emotions again. And I'm like, God, you still haven't done anything about this. So I'm going to take it back up again and try to do it on my own. Giving a problem up to God sounds easy, but it isn't. We can find ourselves picking it back up again. But here's the hope. Here's the promise. Because thanks be to God, when we do fully give it up to God, that's when we can trust and believe that Jesus will simply act. Just like he did by turning water into wine. There's an opportunity when we give it up to God, when we surrender and we let the Holy Spirit move and live and breathe in us in a new way, that something new will emerge. When we are able to name the problem, when we're able to surrender and give it up to God, God is able to transform the problem into something new. Something new that may be unlike anything we have ever expected or imagined. Communication between family members that once seemed impossible might be able to take one more step closer to making it possible. Those things, those secrets that we've tried to hide that we're so scared of, if we're able to give it up to God, God can do something new with it and maybe take it one step further. Amazing things that can happen when God is in control. Because no one expected Jesus to turn water into wine. And the hope, the promise, the gift is that Jesus can take anything, even our biggest problems, and transform them into something beautiful. So today I ask you, what are you hiding? What are you avoiding? What's God stirring in you now to think about and pray about? Maybe it's that thing. Just let it go and give it up to God. He can do something amazing. He can do something through your family and through your relationships that makes them even stronger, even more connected, even closer, and filled with even more love. Pray. Good and gracious God, thank you. Thank you for our families, all of the different configurations, all the different people we call family. God, thank you for them. God, help us as we strive to create the best relationships we can, to keep you at the center so that we can know whatever problems we're facing, we can name them, give them up to you, because when we do, you will act. And you will transform and you will show up in big and small ways, giving us your very best. God, bless us today. Give us strength tomorrow. In the same we pray.